So literally to see a soul that doesn't have love in it, and they're usually the most difficult people, and to say, I want to plant love and let it grow. Because in the twilight of life, we will be judged on love.
Welcome to This Whole Life, a podcast for all of us seeking sanity and sanctity, and a place to find joy and meaning through the integration of faith and mental health. I'm Pat Millay, a Catholic speaker, musician, and leader, and I'm happy to bring you this podcast along with my bride, Kenna, a licensed marriage and family therapist. This is the stuff she and I talk about all the time, doing dishes, in the car, on a date. We're excited to bring you this podcast for educational purposes. It's not therapy or a substitute for mental health care. So come on in, have a seat at our dining room table, and join the conversation with us. We are so glad you're here. Welcome back to This Whole Life, friends. It is Pat Millay here with our good old friend, Father Nathan LaLiberte. Greetings, Father. How are you doing?
Thank you very much. Good to see you. Good to be with you.
Great to see you, brother.
I love what you've done with the studio. It is absolutely incredible.
It's coming along. It's coming along bit by bit, little by little. It's going to be a real professional recording studio by the year 2050. It's going to be great. Yep.
I love realistic dreams. That's
what's great. Tangible and realistic. That's right. Super excited to be here with you. You got to record an episode right before this with Kenna, and I felt left out. So I'm really glad.
Welcome to the party. And then you kicked her out, and now it's just
correct. Yes. Yeah. No, this is the cool kids club now. No, it's where you and I just geek out
nerding
about
out,
superhero things. It'll be great. Yep. I'm really excited to get into the episode today. It's a great topic, a really important, super relevant topic. But before that, a few random kind of odds and ends, practical things for all of our good listeners out there. Practical thing number one is to invite you to join us for our May 2024 episodes in a podcast book study of the book, The Love That Keeps Us Sane by Father Mark Foley, OCD, is a Discalced Carmelite priest. Father Mark Foley has written this beautiful book about the spirituality of Saint Therese of Lisieux and the way that her spirituality is so psychologically healthy and accurate. And this book, The Love That Keeps Us Sane, frankly, is one of the main reasons that Kenna is a therapist. It's one of the great motivations behind the existence of the Martin Center for Integration, which is our organization that's bringing you this podcast. The Martin Center, by the way, is named after Saint Therese of Lisieux's family. The, you know, what would you say in French? The Martins or something fancy like that. Yeah. So this book is really impactful. It's a beautiful book. And if you're listening and you're thinking to yourself, I don't feel like reading a book, let me encourage you by telling you that it is a short book. And that is the most important part for doing something over the course of, you know, 1 month, two episodes. So in the month of May, we're going to have two episodes released. We're going to split the book in half. And the three of us, you, me, and Kenna, are going to have a conversation about the love that keeps us sane, Father. And it's going to be really fantastic.
Yep. I love growing in sanity with the Martins.
It's beautiful. I know it. Tell me about it. My favorite little detail, too, is that Father Mark Foley, who's writing about being psychologically healthy, his religious initials are OCD. Which is just too good to be true. It's fantastic. As far as I know, he does not have OCD, although you can listen to our episode with Dr. Catherine Posh about that. He is a Discalced Carmelite, and those are his religious initials. So, month of May 2024, look forward to it. If you're listening to this after May 2024, go back to it, check it out, and read along with us. It's going to be great. Number two, Kenna and I were pleasantly surprised, and Father, maybe you'll be interested by this too, that in the past few episodes of This Whole Life, the past five episodes that we've released, we have garnered listeners from the nations of India, the UK, which doesn't feel like too much of a stretch, right? Germany, that's still Europe, mm-hmm. You know, Canada. In Minnesota, we're like a stone's throw from Canada, so that's not too far off. The United Arab Emirates.
That's cool.
Which is one of my favorites. Our Dubai friends are listening. And Dubai? Is that? Yeah, Dubai, that's in the UAE, right? Okay. Philippines, Austria, Malta.
Wow. Oh, cool. I know. You get Malta.
Yeah, exactly. So if you are listening from one of those nations, we just want to give you a verbal shout out and say hello in whatever language you speak. Clearly you speak English because you're listening to me right now and I don't speak whatever you do. So howdy, hello, greetings, bonjour.
How you doing?
How you doing? What's up? And we're so glad you're listening. And if you want to share us with your friends in South America, I think that's the continent where we have the fewest listeners right now. So try to build up our Brazilian contingent and we'll be in good shape. All right. Number three, like always, if you would just rate and review and subscribe, give us 5 stars if you think we earned it. If you didn't think we earned it, send us an email, tell us why, and we will either do what you tell us to, or we will say thank you and ignore it, but out of love and charity. So please do that if you would. That'd be fantastic. We're going to play a game in a second, Father, because okay. I don't want to sit in a room with you and not laugh a little bit. But before we do that, just for the sake of the rest of the episode, so you know what we're getting to, I would imagine that every single person listening to this podcast right now interacts with difficult people, and that probably happens pretty often. All of us from time to time deal with people that we have a hard time interacting with for whatever reason. We just have interpersonal difficulties with them. And if we're being honest, you and I are the difficult people from time to time. So this is not
for other people.
For other people. That's right. Exactly. So this is not like someone else's problem. It's not those people out there that are difficult. We are all difficult because we are different, and sometimes those differences really rub into each other and really create a lot of stress and tension. So how in the world are we supposed to love our enemies, like Jesus says, when we can't even love our coworkers, our neighbors, our uncles, our siblings, our roommates? You know, that's where we're going in the episode today, and it's going to be great. So buckle up, get on board. You ready to have some fun, Father?
Let's do it.
It's going to be great. All right. So we are going to play a little game. It's a game of this or that.
Okay.
Which is basically a game of me finding out what opinions of yours are just totally weird. And okay. then we can talk about that for a minute. Okay. This is going to be movie this or that. All right.
Okay.
So I know that you enjoy some movies. I suspect that as a priest, you don't have a lot of time to watch a lot of movies. So part of the game is going to be, if you haven't seen some of these movies, you just need to tell me. And I will tell you how I feel about the fact that you haven't seen those movies.
Good. Okay.
But you still have to pick this or that. So it, you know, if you have not seen either movie, you got to pick one and tell me which one you like better based on the actors and actresses, based on the title of the movie alone, based on what it's about. You got to pick one.
Okay. So I feel like this is like, how culturally relevant is the priest?
That is probably the game.
Okay. Yes. Great. Okay. Let's
we're
going to
find
let's
out.
Roll.
We're going to start off easy. Okay.
Okay.
Because I don't actually know the answer to this. Better MCU movie.
Oh, easy.
Okay.
Cake.
The original Avengers. Okay. Attack on New York, the first time they all get together, the whole thing. Or The Winter Soldier, Captain America, The Winter Soldier.
I would choose The Winter Soldier.
Really?
Yeah. I love the Avengers. I love the action scene. I love seeing all of them together. But the character development and Captain America is hands down my favorite. And then to see the dynamic between him and Bucky. And I don't want to wreck the movie for anyone that hasn't seen it. It is exceptionally well done. And so, believe it or not, it was my dad that got me hooked on that. That's his favorite movie.
Really?
And he's watched it. I literally looked on his iPad. It's been streamed 25 times. and so I'm just like, I'm so proud of my father, but also too, just, I want to share in that. I want to be a good son. And so that has been my favorite. Would you say the other way around?
Living in your father's legacy.
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
So it's tricky for me because they are two of my probably top five, definitely top 10, but maybe top 5 MCU movies. I would probably lean Winter Soldier by a nose.
Okay.
But it's really close.
Fair. That's fair.
Because Avengers has like the nostalgia factor of like, this was the beginning of this whole universe with all these multiple Avengers movies, and it gets to Endgame and all that, whatever. But Winter Soldier is just such a tight, really great movie. It's got like the like spy thriller, like, yeah. Not James Bond. Who's the other one?
Jason Bourne.
Thank you. It's got like the Jason Bourne vibes to it. Like that kind of feel I like a lot. So I think it's Winter Soldier, but not by much.
Fair.
Yeah. Yeah. So I agree. Good job. That's a good start.
Thank you. Okay.
Here's where the wheels might come off. You ready? Better rom-com romantic comedy movie. Okay. See if you've seen either of these. When Harry Met Sally or My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
Haven't seen either of them.
Okay.
I do know, I think the first one's with Tom Hanks though, right?
No, that was Billy Crystal.
Okay.
And what's her face? Meg Ryan back okay. in the day. Yeah.
I would just choose My Big Fat Greek Wedding just because I was in Greece. That literally is it. It has nothing to do with anything.
That's perfectly acceptable criteria. Both? Yes, I have. Yeah, I've seen both. Yeah. I think My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2 okay. is what I would do.
Is it worth watching, honestly?
My Big Fat Greek Wedding? It's really good. Okay. I like it a lot.
All right, yeah. All right, I'll put it down.
It's cute. It's got a lot of really funny one-liners. It's goofy, but it's like really entertaining throughout it too. Okay. Yeah, it's fun. Right, I liked it a lot. Yeah. Okay. Better Tom Hanks movie.
Oh, I mentioned Tom Hanks.
Yeah, look at you. See, Forrest Gump or Saving Private Ryan?
Probably Forrest Gump.
Okay.
Yeah, I just, but more so it has like memories for me of watching it when I watched it. Saving Private Ryan, beautifully done movie. But oh, yeah. Like, I love the character development in Forrest Gump. Mm-hmm. And I love how clueless he is and innocent and stuff. So,
yep.
Would you?
100% agree.
Yeah.
Yep. I love Saving Private Ryan. It's one of the better movies ever made. But outside of Marvel movies, Forrest Gump is my stone cold favorite movie of all time. And there was a time period where I was in eighth grade, ninth grade, and I had very few friends where I watched Forrest Gump probably every Friday for about a year and a half. So like I've seen that movie. It's a long movie. I've seen a 3-hour movie like 50 times in my life. And that's impressive. Quote a bunch of it to you, but it's like, it's goofy and fun. It hits at like these beautifully deep human levels that the like gut wrenching part for me, like it was one of the early parts, I think, in my life, maybe where I started to get the sense in my life that love is the greatest good, that greater than intelligence, greater than wealth, greater than success, greater than fame and popularity and power, that like, so here's this guy who is unintelligent by the way he's born. He stumbles into all this amazing good fortune, but his main priority is love, right? So he tells Jenny at the end of the movie, I do know what love is, right? Like, you don't have to be smart to know what love is,
Jenny,
and to live in love. Oh gosh, it's just so good. Oh, thank you. Okay, thank you for letting me go back to that. Okay, better movie with a significant plot twist, The Matrix or The Sixth Sense?
Oh man, dude, for the plot twist, it's going to be Sixth Sense. I did not see that coming.
Really?
No. And yeah. I no one should be able to ruin that movie. So if you have not seen it, I will not mention anything of why. But the plot twist was absolutely insane. And M. Night Shyamalan, is that what it is?
Yeah, Shyamalan.
Shyamalan.
Yeah, right.
That was like one of his best movies.
For sure.
But Matrix, hands down, man. That movie was incredible. There's another AI movie, but I didn't bristle at that one as much.
Right.
Because I just feel like that's actually more of an AI attack of like lulling you into sleep.
Yep.
To the point where like you think reality is not reality.
Totally.
And whatnot. That's how I could imagine, because AI is supposed to be smarter than us, right?
Yeah, right. That's the idea. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So a full-on war doesn't make sense because
they
just want to lull us to sleep and use us as batteries.
Totally. Right. I think I would go with The Matrix just on the rewatch factor. Like The Sixth Sense was amazing. It was one of the better plot twist moments in American history, right? But once you've seen it once and you know that that's the deal, you could maybe watch it a second time and look for all the clues, you know? But after that, you just kind of know what's happening and it's not as scary as it used to be, things like that, right? But I rewatched The Matrix again probably like 2 months ago or something like that, and it's still so good. Yeah. Like the action scenes are still good. I don't know how they did that kind of CGI 20 years ago, but that's still really good. It's really, really cool. Yeah. And it plays into Keanu Reeves' acting stability, which is just no emotion. It really,
John Wick.
He does a great job. That's right. Final one. Okay. Better movie directed by Christopher Nolan,
ooh,
Memento or The Prestige?
Memento.
Yeah.
It was so brilliant.
Yeah.
Just going from, you know, rewind forward. It was just so well done with like the snapshots. I honestly watched that first time in seminary.
Oh, no kidding. Okay.
And like, I remember it was just silent in the lounge where we were watching it because everyone was just so enraptured by it.
Yeah. 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 The Prestige is great.
Okay.
It's great, but I think Memento too.
It was groundbreaking, really.
Yeah.
I mean, did it.
Right.
So I'm going to throw one nerd one at you.
Well, let me explain my Memento situation first. Okay, this is how much Memento messed with my head, okay? I watched that sophomore year of college in the dorm with a bunch of buddies, okay? We watched it on, I don't know what, like a Friday night at like 8 o'clock or something. The movie gets over at like 10:30 or whatever, and all of us sit in total silence trying to figure out what in the name of goodness has just happened, because it's so confusing. It's so you're trying to track with what's even happening and what order things are going in the movie first, right? Everyone gets up and all the other guys leave to go to a party. I stay there and watch the entire movie all by myself again, just to piece together this insanity that I had just seen. It's so good. I love it.
Your dedication is just amazing, Pat.
Dedication, obsession, I don't know.
Whatever's manifesting.
You be the judge. All right.
Okay, so the nerd one.
Right? Yes,
this
please.
Is like classic nerd.
Okay.
Labyrinth or Princess Bride?
Okay. I have very strong feelings about this because Labyrinth scared the bejesus out of me when I was a kid. The weird David Bowie steals a baby and is holding it in this weird castle. Like, I was not cool with that. I went and saw that in the theaters when I was like 8 years old or something like that. And I was horrified. It was so scary. All the weird Muppets dancing and stuff. Princess Bride is one of the better movies ever made. Sure, it's just so good. Okay, I loved one of my great fatherly moments was having our older kids watch The Princess Bride and having them get all the goofy, nerdy, like pun jokes that are in there. And it's so great. I was literally just thinking about that movie the other day because I was remembering how much I was afraid of quicksand when I was a kid. Hmm. And I don't know if it was part of that movie, too. Like, I just imagined that quicksand was everywhere out in the world, and you never knew when it was going to hit. Anyway, it's a great movie.
Well, I love when I'm doing a rehearsal for a wedding.
Yeah.
And I will always drop marriage.
Classic.
And, like,
kills every time, right?
Every single time you see, like, the people crawling up, they're like, oh, my gosh, did the priest just say that?
That's hilarious. There's got to be not many jokes that you have as a priest that you know are just crowd pleasers 100% of the time,
and
right?
That would be it.
This is a 10 out of 10 success rate. Yeah. Oh, man. Well, thank you for playing along. Thank you for the game.
Appreciate
thank
it.
You for admitting when you have not seen movies. And
yep, the rom-coms failed me.
Embracing your humility. Is that right? A single celibate man doesn't
shocking.
Power through the rom-coms Friday after Friday. Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm really excited for this conversation because you and I, as Catholic men, anybody out there who is of any background whatsoever, we all have experience with difficult people, and all of us, in some capacity, struggle to deal with difficult people in a loving way. So how are the ways that we are supposed to engage in these relationships, to work with people that we just have a really hard time interacting with? Maybe, Father, if you can start us off with just kind of helping define what we mean when we say difficult people, because that's a really broad definition. What are we kind of getting at here at first?
Yeah, so the goal, I think, in us pursuing this is there are people that just kind of make us bristle, or that we avoid, or that we get frustrated or impatient with very quickly. And we would label those people as difficult because they're not enjoyable for us to be around. Mm. So really at the crux of this is really a distinction between liking stuff and not liking stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where like the difficulty arises. And then when we hold that in tandem with Christ's commandment to love, in particular, he says, you'll be known as my disciples by how you love.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So this is why this topic actually matters, especially for me as a priest. It's actually a topic about evangelization, is if we interact with people who are difficult and say, I just got to avoid them because they're annoying to me, I don't like them, it actually usurps the power of the Christian message, where mm-hmm. Christ is like, what good is it to love those who love you?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I guess what I'm hearing you say in part is maybe even being more specific about the topic, dealing with people that are difficult for me.
Correct. Yes. Yeah.
Because
it's all in preference.
Because no one in the world, I would say, probably almost no one, is difficult for everyone, right?
Hmm. Challenge accepted.
All right. You're going to try to be that person?
No. I'm just going to. Okay. I don't. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Because there's sometimes, like there's one priest that said, sometimes the rocks in someone's head match the holes in another. And that's the reality is some people that you'd find difficult are loved by others and vice versa. So
yeah,
I think you're probably right.
Yeah. So the truth is that there are people wandering around the world for whom it is difficult for me to interact with. And it doesn't mean that they are objectively difficult, that they are impossible to be in a relationship with. It's just that for whatever reason, the way that I was made, the way that they were made, do not click together, doesn't work like a jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah, let me give you like a prime example, right? So like the temperaments, I think, are oftentimes what kind of underline this. Mm. Is so if someone is introverted or extroverted,
right.
Oftentimes we'll actually have a preference for that. So if someone's at a social event and they're holding court, the introvert loves that because they will never have to share anything. They'll never be asked a question. They can just go to the party, eat, be around people, and leave. And like, thank God for the extroverts. But people who are either like moderate or also extroverts, they hate that person because like, oh, they're so arrogant. They're always talking. They're never shutting up. They're never listening.
Yeah.
And they're like, they can't stand them. So it's interesting that here's this one person, but the temperament is oftentimes what is the issue, mm-hmm. which is not a moral issue.
Right.
Temperaments right. are just character aspects.
Mm-hmm.
They're mm-hmm. who we are, personality. And so like, it's not like someone is evil or good.
Right. Right.
It's just someone is someone that I enjoy being with or someone that I don't.
We've done so much work in our family with this book, The Temperament God Gave You, right? That there are these four kind of like classical temperaments that you could break it down into sanguine, phlegmatic, melancholic, and choleric. And someday we'll do an episode on that too, because it's a whole different, really fascinating kind of characteristic type process. But it's really helped me and Kenna just know how we relate to each other, the things that we do that are not moral issues. They're not issues of sin or virtue. They're just the ways that we function in the world, the ways that we were built. And sometimes those ways really don't work well together. Yep. And it really has helped us just in our own little kind of microcosm of a marriage to look at each other with grace and patience and to say, all right, you did not specifically choose to annoy the heck out of me today. That's just the way you see the world, right? Mm-hmm. And vice versa, you know?
Father Jeff Heward really would always thing. Tell us at the seminary, you can't put into someone what God himself left out, which basically is just a way of saying like someone's temperament is them. And if you're frustrated because they're not more like something you enjoy or like, you have to check yourself to say, hey, maybe God didn't put this in them and they're not capable of it. Mm-hmm. And I just have to learn to love and accept it how it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like to actually draw people's attention to like food preferences.
Yeah.
Because no one really balks at those. Like if someone says like, hey, I like this, I don't like this, you're like, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
But like, why doesn't that transition to people? Like we just started with movies, right? What's your preference between these two movies?
Yeah.
We're not talking about moral issues. What's your preference between, you know, what brand of clothing you wear or where you vacation or what music you listen to? None of these things are balked at. We might have strong preferences, but at the end, we allow for those realities to exist. But suddenly, when it comes to people, it is taboo and not okay to say, I just don't like that person. And somehow that makes me like not good or not Christian.
Yeah.
So it's just, I think that's really honestly an immature way to look at reality is like, there are going to be people we just don't like, and that's actually okay. And this is where we can shift gears to Christianity and be like, oh my gosh, there's a solution to this problem. It's not making me have to like, for I hate kimchi and sauerkraut.
Yeah.
Hate them.
You and me both.
They are products. Okay. If a food is rotten, rule of thumb, don't eat it.
Thank you.
But
I
then,
would throw pickles into that category too, but that's going to really get controversial.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. That's like fully rotten. That's kind of like, pickled. But like if Kenna was in here, she'd probably like throw it on cuffs, right?
Yeah.
And so it's just, it's interesting where, okay, it's just a preference. So I can say, I really do not like this person. And it doesn't necessarily put them in a negative light or even me in a negative light. It's just saying there's something that is not enjoyable.
And What's helpful, I think, is looking at people's characteristics, their temperaments, their personality traits, and distinguishing those from choices that are good or evil, you know? And I think the temptation, like you mentioned, Father, for a lot of us is to look at someone's temperament, to look at their character traits, to look at their personality, and to say, well, that person is selfish because they always are the first one to tell a story at a dinner party because they just want the spotlight on themselves. They don't think about anyone else. Or this person is cowardly because they're not the ones to bring up the difficult conversation when it's what really needs to be said, you know? And it's so easy for us to assign moral value to an amoral thing, because frankly, sometimes those same actions are a sign of selfishness or cowardice, right? So, the first step, I think, is to work, do the work internally to distinguish, is this something that is a genuine moral issue that needs to be addressed in some way? Or is this a call for me to love this person in spite of a character trait, a personality trait that I don't necessarily get along with or appreciate?
Yeah, I think that just allowing ourselves to have the ability to say, I just don't really like someone is actually very freeing. Because sometimes we try to force ourselves to see something that's not there or to value something that might not be valuable to us. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. But this is where I think we short circuit love. And can I just talk about the love aspect a little bit? So, I mean, when Christ encourages us to love, I mean, I think that the show The Chosen does a remarkable job of showing how Christ's disciples, they didn't always like each other.
Yeah.
And it even shows that, like, I mean, sometimes, right, they were, Christ pulled them by the scruff of their neck to say, like, look, you need to love your brother. And you don't need to like them. Like, he didn't try to go into, like, here's what you should enjoy about this person, and here's the values of their culture, and here's their perspectives you should appreciate.
Yeah.
He was like, I don't care if you don't reconcile any of those things. You just need to show them love.
Mm-hmm.
And how this honestly looks is we look past preferences and choose the person. And there was something, one of the most helpful things, again, came from Father Jeff Heward, the spiritual director in the seminary. God rest him. He would tell us, he's like, you got to balance your life with easy people and hard people. And he said, there's certain people that you naturally get along with. Like, they're just really enjoyable. Like, they're the people you would call to go out to a movie or a fun night,
right,
or that you'd invite out to a meal or you'd spend your time off with. These are the easy friends and they fill your cup. There's a reciprocity. Whereas hard friends or hard people are maybe people that you just have to interact with based on either work situation, even parish life, maybe it's family. And you have to actually balance it to say, okay, that's going to take so much energy out of my cup. So I need to make sure that I'm surrounding those meetings with hard friends or hard people with easy friends or easy people that will fill the cup so that I'm not completely drained. And this is oftentimes where sometimes the people that are most difficult, they don't always know how much they're taking. And so sometimes we will just let our schedules and our lives be consumed by the difficult that keeps sucking out life. And we don't do the responsible thing of saying, hey, what's actually going to pour something back into my cup?
And what I love about that is being able to draw out that really crucial distinction between liking somebody and loving somebody. That at no point in any of the scriptures, in any of our Christian tradition, are we commanded to like people ever, because that is impossible in some situations. You know, liking somebody is, just like you said, an easy relationship, an easy friendship. Love is this active gift of self, loving the other, choosing their good simply because they are a person, right? And that can be with people that we don't like, all the way down to our literal enemies, like Jesus says in Matthew chapter 5, to love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. So if we're called to love our enemies, the ones who are actively trying to hurt us, and there is sin there, then certainly we're called to love the people that we don't really appreciate getting along with, you know? And frankly, part of loving them might be being honest about the relationship, of being honest with ourselves.
Not necessarily to them.
I was just going to say, yeah, exactly. Yeah, being honest with ourselves and admitting, you know what, I just don't like spending time with this person. But stopping there and not telling the whole office that I don't like Bob, you know?
Or just even removing yourself completely. Like, okay, then I'm just going to avoid him. It's just to say, right, okay, here's what I'm going to do is I'm going to actively show some sort of a kindness to him. So this, the prime example from the life of Christ, and this is literally from the Gospels, is the story of Zacchaeus. So it's literally documented in the gospel that the people of Jericho hated Zacchaeus.
Right.
Like, they hated him with passion. And so he was objectively the most difficult person in Jericho. Christ comes in, and again, everyone is hedging Zacchaeus out. He's in the background. He can't even get through to see Jesus coming.
Right.
So he climbs up the sycamore tree, and he's just looking on, and suddenly Jesus stops and says, Zacchaeus, I must stay with you. Now, I don't think that Jesus was like, oh man, this guy is going to be awesome with parties, right? Is he probably heard the reputation before he came in there? People are like, hey, Jesus, there's this person named Zacchaeus. He's terrible. Stay away from him. And Jesus looks at him with love and says, I got to stay at your house today. And it just melts Zacchaeus. Mm. And so I see Christ modeling that here's one of the most difficult people that he moves towards with love, and it transforms this guy's love. And this is how the gospel is meant to actually transform. And this is why Christ says, we don't move away from people we don't like. Mm. Is we have to go in to love them, because it actually plants seeds. Like John of the Cross has this great quote. He says, the goal of the Christian life is to plant seeds of love in places where it does not exist. Hmm. So literally to see a soul that doesn't have love in it, and they're usually the most difficult people, and to say, I want to plant love and let it grow. Because in the twilight of life, we will be judged on love.
Mm-hmm. And what's so beautiful about that is, I think that the temptation is so I'm thinking of like five different situations in my life where all I want to do is like cut a person out, you know, because it's so tempting. A relationship is difficult because it's hard. It takes effort and strain, and it drains your cup, like you were saying. It takes energy to be in a relationship with this person, to maybe talk about things that we don't agree on, and to sit in that hardship, or to listen to the same story for the 19th time in a row, and to deal with that small but genuine form of suffering. You know, like there are all these different things that are all difficult. And the temptation is just to say, well, it's not worth it. Forget it. I'm out. Like, I'm not coming home for Christmas. I'm not going to the staff meeting. I'm not, like, you name it, you know? And the beautiful opportunity to plant seeds of love and to stay in contact, in relationship with these difficult people who are equally beloved by God, right? This is not a matter of like, well, God thinks that guy's kind of the worst too. Like, no. Like, God made that child on purpose, with a purpose, and being able to plant seeds of love in their life. And it doesn't mean planting seeds of even truth necessary right off the bat. Like, if I disagree with a relative about something, it's not the call to come into Thanksgiving dinner, guns blazing, ready to show them how right I am about some political issue. You know, what are the seeds of truth that I plant? Now, truth and love are always related, so obviously there's a little bit of both there, but man, what a great opportunity to stay in contact, in communion with folks that we find challenging, so that we can give love to them. And I'm sure almost 100% of the time we can receive love from them as well when we take that chance.
And so I think a little asterisk just to put on that is the language of boundaries.
Mm.
Because, I mean, just to even like the imagery of filling your cup or depleting your cup, right? There are certain times where you may look at your life and say, running thin. Like, I am not going to be able to love as I should in this. Like, yeah. I just need to kind of tap out for a season because I'm not going to respond well right now. I have too many strong opinions, preferences, and I'm exhausted.
Yep.
And we actually even see Jesus do this in a way when he's called to Simon Peter's mother-in-law's house to heal. He heals her. Word goes around. Everyone starts coming to the door. Mm-hmm. And then Jesus just vanishes in the dead of night, and the disciples don't know where. So now you can imagine, right? The disciples, this is early in the discipleship.
Right.
People are like, where's Jesus? And they're like, we don't know. And they're like, you guys are idiots, you know? So then they're frantically looking for Christ. They find him, and they're like, the whole town is looking for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Jesus unapologetically says, okay, I'm going to the next town. Like, not my problem. And he literally moves to the next town. And like, this is part of the beauty of Christ as he models this to say, you know, mm-hmm. sometimes I have people pressing on me for things and I can't do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that verbiage is important, because if we don't have the phrase, not my problem, in our vocabulary, it's going to be really hard to actually sift through to say, okay, when can I invest in a relationship and when do I not be able to? Because sometimes the difficult people are like this whirlpool or quicksand, as you mentioned earlier.
Right.
It just sucks you in and it's like, you can't get out. Mm. But at a certain point, we have to look at it and do exactly what Christ said, is not my problem. There's another scene, actually, from the gospel where two brothers come up to Jesus and they say, you know, my brother won't share the inheritance. Mm-hmm. And Jesus looks at him and just says, what does that have to do with me?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not your arbitrator and judge. And then he goes on and gives a beautiful parable about greed.
Yeah.
And doesn't even address the situation. So essentially saying, it's not my problem.
Yeah.
And so the fact that Jesus could actually say that gives us permission that there's going to be certain difficult people that come into our life that want to thrust stuff onto us. And we get to respond with love, as Jesus always did, said, not my problem.
Mm-hmm. And what I assume that you're adding or including in that phrase, that's not my problem, is not a lack of empathy either. So just because this is a problem that you have the agency and the capability to deal with, and I do not have the bandwidth to deal with it, or it's not appropriate, it's not my place to deal with it, it doesn't mean that I don't care about you or about the struggle that you're going through. I'm more than happy to be empathetic about how your experience, but I am not here to solve all of your problems, mm-hmm. right? And even Jesus himself, I mean, like, it's not that he didn't care about the people involved. He has perfect love for everyone. One of the great mysteries is for all the lepers and blind people that he didn't heal all of them. And sometimes he left towns where there were people who were still sick and dying because that was a good part of his mission, but it wasn't the ultimate mission. You know, his ultimate mission was salvation of souls, not necessarily eternal earthly life. You know, it's not to keep everyone from dying for the rest of
their life. To fix everyone's problems.
To fix everyone's problems, right?
As he tells Judas right before he goes to his last supper, right? Is even if all the poor were here, like the poor will always be with you.
Yeah.
So what Mary Magdalene did in pouring the costly oil over his feet, it's like, that's great.
Yeah.
The poor will always be with you. So there will always be issues.
Right.
And it's not always your problems to fix. And somebody's I think this problems. Is what actually depletes us so much that we can't be attentive to love. I mean, I think I've just heard so much, and I don't know if it's directly spoken by Christians, but there's this like ethos that to be nice is the ultimate good. Mm-hmm. And I think that's even a cultural thing that's kind of infused into Christianity.
Yeah.
It's like niceness is the best thing, but niceness isn't even once in the Bible.
Yeah.
Kindness is plenty of times because niceness doesn't actually require virtue.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And like it's oftentimes just a disposition. Like this is how I actually like to refer to it when like I'm teaching is niceness for the Christian is like makeup on a person.
Hmm.
Like it might just change the external experience, but it doesn't change the person.
Mm-hmm.
Kindness actually goes very, very deep into the person. It's not just a kind of shallow, fickle thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why like we have the joke in Minnesota, like Minnesota nice.
I was just going to say, yeah.
I mean, because it's the whole thing. It's like someone might say like, you know, oh, it's really nice to meet you. Like, welcome to the neighborhood. We're going to gossip about you for the next 20 years. I mean, like, so they'll give you a casserole and then they'll shred you to pieces. And yeah. It's like, that's not okay.
It's Minnesota. They'll give you a hot dish.
Hot dish, I'm sorry.
Thank you very much.
As a native Minnesotan, I'm shameful. I'm sorry. Yes, it's hot
okay.
dish.
It is Let your people down. That's okay. Yeah. But no, that is true that I think being nice to someone is easy because we want to be perceived as a good person. So putting on this, maybe a facade
or of a veneer,
kindness,
yeah.
a veneer of kindness, that's a nice thing to be able to portray because someone will walk away from me thinking, oh, what a wonderful person that was. You know, it's much more difficult to be genuinely kind because kindness means that on a level of my soul, I am seeking what is best for this other person.
Yeah.
You know, that I'm treating them with dignity and charity because God made them and they are worthy of dignity and charity. Even if the dignity and charity means telling them things that are difficult to hear.
I got a prime example.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's like an example that I think is applicable to many people who have been in the working world. All right. And especially management. So niceness is keeping an employee in the job, knowing he or she is no longer the right fit and therefore failing him or her and the company because you don't have the courage to do the kind thing. Kindness would call you to tell him or her that they are not the person for the position and then dignify them in the transition to find where they belong. And I think this is like the distinction is sometimes niceness tolerates things that are not okay. Kindness actually directly talks about something that needs to be addressed and then assists with charity to carry it out in the right direction. So niceness, you can see, is actually an evil in a lot of ways.
Right.
Because it just, I don't know, it's like fakeness that doesn't actually allow for virtue to flourish.
Mm-hmm. If it's avoiding the truth, if it's not serving someone well because it's difficult for us, it's hard for me to stomach the tension so I don't tell someone something that they need to hear or is important for them to hear. Yeah, man. And I'm just thinking of so many times that, I mean, it's easy, I think, to categorize certain individuals in our life and put them in the difficult person category, right? That every interaction I have with them is just a challenge. And there certainly are some of those people I can think of, even genuinely, and I mean this, even really good people that I know are good and holy and nothing that they did was, you know, malicious or whatever, like people in ministry, like volunteers that I would work with over the years in parishes. I can think of one in particular who was just the completely opposite personality from me. And I couldn't stand being in meetings with her because she would nitpick all the different things that were not good enough about the ministry yet, you know, like, well, there was this, you know, lunch was a little bit too long and they started getting antsy at the retreat, you know, and there, we should have started confession 5 minutes earlier so we could have a better transition, things like that. And it just grated on my last nerve because what I was hearing was like critique and just henpecking at this ministry that I love so much. What she was doing was just, she loved the ministry too, and she wanted to make it as good as possible. So she wasn't comfortable just living through like a mediocre, okay ministry. She wanted to find ways to make God's ministry even better and to make his glory even more pronounced. You know, it was, so she was in my life a difficult person that was really important for me to be in contact with because we balanced each other out really well in a ministry setting, you know? But then there are other people that I'm thinking of that they themselves are not difficult people, but I certainly go through difficult moments with them, right? Like literally the people I love the most in the world. Sometimes Kenna's not here, so I can talk about it. Sometimes, just kidding. Sometimes Kenna is a difficult person for me to be around. And I love her more than any human being who will ever live, right? But her differences to mine, her personality different from mine, means that some days we don't like each other at all. But we are commanded and we promise to love each other even on the days that we don't like each other. I have a house full of toddlers sometimes, and they are people that I love more than almost anyone else in the world, just outside of Kenna. Sometimes I don't like them at all. Bedtime is one particular time lately that I do not like my toddler children because they are a hurricane and I'm not much better. So we grate on each other in those moments, but I like them almost every other time and I love them all the time, right? So there's this interesting interplay between liking and loving that we're called to love always, and we just take the experience of enjoying someone when it's a gift.
Yeah, and I love the example you gave from your work too, Pat, just about this person who was not trying to hurt you or critique you, but it was taken as those things. And so she became a difficult person for you, even though she was just kind of being authentic to her temperament of, she's probably very detail oriented where you're big picture oriented.
Right.
And so this is oftentimes what happens is why if we remove ourselves from difficult people, we oftentimes don't grow either. And just pushing ourselves to kind of, even with you and Kenna's example, right? Of sometimes I really do not like her and yet I still choose to love her. And those are the moments in a relationship where depth happens because it's no longer just on surface compatibilities. But it's also even like going back to the work example of I'm trying to find out how is her perspective going to help youth ministry versus you're missing the big picture, girl. I mean, like, there's a very, very different thing. And sifting through like and love is actually very helpful for that because like is such a preferential thing, it's really hard to navigate. Like, can I give an example from my past? So my dad just absolutely loved to rollerblade. He always loved to rollerblade and he wanted to bring us any moment we could around one of the lakes into rollerblade. I hated rollerblading. Like with a passion. I love to bike. I like to walk around. I like to do those things. Skateboard even. Rollerblade. I just hated it for some reason. I think I was probably afraid of like hitting rocks and flying. I watched a YouTube video or something that's freaked me out. But like, so my dad would always try to convince me of why I should like to rollerblade. And he'd be like, it's like this and it's so much fun. And he'd bring me, make me go rollerblade. He's like, look at how much enjoyment we're having. I'm not exaggerating. For 10 years, he was working on helping me to like rollerblading. It never happened. And like even Skateville events, I would just sit and play video games. Like I'm not skating. And so like the reason I bring this example up is no matter how hard my dad tried to make me like something that I didn't like, I didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
If he would have shifted gears and said, okay, clearly Nate doesn't like this. What can we find another area to find common ground? Like, okay, let's do, you know, I liked paintball at that time. Maybe he liked paintball, or I liked, you know, going to the arboretum and walking around. Like, maybe we could do that. So to find something that wasn't trying to convince me was actually that middle ground where love could breed.
Mm.
And so both of us withheld love then from each other on those moments, because it was like basically a preference war.
Mm.
This is often times where we mess up in the ministry to difficult people, is we make it into preference wars, opinion wars, and what we like and don't like, and having to convince people. Whereas love just shoots right through the center of it and says, I'm going to take the person where they're at. How can we love in a new way?
And there are probably some even more difficult moments, I would imagine, where somebody that we used to enjoy a lot has become someone, or we have become a duo of people who do not like being around each other anymore. You know, I'm sure there are lots of family of origin situations where people have, you know, parents that are getting older, they're becoming adults, and maybe that relationship with their parents it doesn't come as easily as it used to when they were kids. Certainly as brothers and sisters age and they kind of start going their separate ways, they're living in different places, maybe they're having different experiences, coming to different conclusions. Maybe there are siblings that are really difficult for us to be around and to get along with now. And even something like in a marriage, you know, that a husband and wife who, you know, from the moment they got married, they have enjoyed each other's company, they love being around it, they couldn't get enough of each other, frankly. Like, the 24 hours in a day were limiting. They wish there were 30 hours in a day to spend with each other back then. And maybe they're in a season now where it's really, really difficult. Like retirement.
That happens a lot.
All of a sudden, they're with each other maybe 24/7, and they weren't banking on that, right? So all those personality quirks and you know, tensions that were present, they weren't amplified because they weren't around each other that often. But now all of those troubles and trials get turned up to 11 because they're with each other all the time, you know? So I think, and I'd like to get your take on this too, Father, but I wonder if there's an opportunity in relationships that it would be unhelpful and maybe uncharitable to remove ourselves from. So, you know, I don't have to necessarily, you know, be around my parents all the time, but it might be uncharitable in most situations for me to never talk to my parents again, for example, or my siblings. It would be uncharitable for me to just leave and abandon my spouse, right? So I would imagine there's an opportunity to start to do some processing, maybe even journaling about how can I love this person even when I don't like them? And maybe even getting really tangible and practical about it, you know? What am I able to do out of love for this person? So how can I show my spouse that I still, that how can I show them love even if we're in a really difficult spot in our marriage? How can I show my parents or my siblings some love that comes from God, even if I have a hard time being around them? And I'm using that word able to on purpose, because it does come back to really healthy boundaries. Like you mentioned, Father, that the question is always, what am I able to give? And if I try to give things that I'm unable to give, what it's going to end up doing eventually is just creating resentment and exhaustion in me. And I'm going to be less able to be loving than I was at the beginning, actually. So just doing some kind of like really practical processing of what am I able to do out of love for this person, even small things that maybe they don't even notice or know about.
It is a really hard thing, especially with the boundaries piece. And because every person is unique and relationships are unique, it's hard to have a paint all. I think we just have to do that soul searching, right? Am I withdrawing from the situation? And then there's the whole punishing reality. Like, am I giving them the silent treatment? Am I trying to hurt them by withdrawing?
Yeah.
Or is it a matter of like, at this season in my life, I can't. And like, I wish I could. And like, there's almost a humiliation that like, I wish I could give more than I could, but I just can't. And so there is a lot of soul searching. I love the idea that you gave of journaling, and that's not my favorite thing at all. I hate to journal.
Yeah.
But I've just found sometimes when I put my thoughts out of like, here's where I find this person difficult, it does kind of sometimes act as a roadmap to help me to kind of navigate, okay, so what's really taxing me right now? Are they doing something that is, you know, offensive to me, or is it just against my preferences and opinions? And this is oftentimes where we find wells of endurance where we didn't know that they were before, is when we start to label it as it is. It's like, oh, well, I just hate it when they are, we sit down for dinner and they chew with their mouth open. And like, it drives me crazy and I don't even want to be around them anymore. And so like, I just stopped coming to dinners. Like, I know it sounds stupid, but people make those decisions.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so just to say, okay, either A, right, I've got to tell the person, hey, can you chew with your mouth closed? Or even just to say, okay, I'm going to sit somewhere else. Or just to know, like, for the next hour and a half, I'm going to be sick to my stomach because I'm hearing after every single bite. And just to continually say, okay, well, I'm going to love the person in the midst of it, because there's nothing morally wrong they're doing. It's just grinding my preferences.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's a really great opportunity for humility with all this too, that I found a point a few weeks ago where Mother Teresa would say to her missionaries of charity, her sisters, I'm paraphrasing, but essentially, it is important for all of you to be patient with the sins and errors and failures of others, knowing that you will soon require their patience for your sins, failings, and errors, you know?
I got it. So Bishop Cousins would always do retreats for the missionaries of charity. And he said, without fail, the novices would come to him at some point and say, Father, I've become a worse person since I've joined the missionaries of charity. And he would always respond, oh, sister, you've always been that bad. You just didn't know it. And there's truth. Like, that's a humility self-knowledge piece.
And that's why he's a bishop today.
And that is why he's a bishop today. Yep. No, we don't see it.
I used to say all the time, and I remember talking to Ryan O'Hara in our episode about fostering and parenthood and adoption, things like that, his struggles with anger. I remember saying to him, I was never angry until I had kids. And the truth is that seed was there, but it didn't have the circumstances to blossom into full-blown angry outbursts, you know? And now it's become this real, genuine character struggle that I continue to wrestle with, because the opportunity is always there now, you know? That's really funny. I can't imagine telling a missionary to charity, you've always been this bad. But there is, I mean, anyone who is honest and has any modicum of humility will acknowledge that, yes, there are things about them that are probably really difficult for other people to handle. And it, again, much of that, maybe even most of it, is not some sinful, malicious act on our part. Some of it is, and we take that to confession, you know, but a lot of it is just the way that we are wired. It's the way we were raised by our family. It's the perspectives that we bring from the family of origin. A lot of it is, frankly, just natural, and it's in our DNA. It's the way that we're wired to see the world and to respond to it. A lot of it is what we've learned over years and years and years of being shown, this type of behavior works for me and it helps me make friends and it gets a laugh. This type of behavior gets weird looks and people don't like it when I do that. You know, all of that gets lumped together and we just do it, you know. But a lot of it's not a moral issue. It's just the way that we interact with the world. And that's really hard for other people around us sometimes. Man, so just, you know, easy. Get out there and love everyone. You know, even the people that are peasy, really hard to love. Yeah. And I mean, the beauty there, obviously, is that we know as Christians that love of neighbor is not an option. It's a command. It's obligatory for us.
And they will not know you're a Christian without it.
Right, right. That's the defined, it's Forrest Gump. It's the highest virtue, right? It's the defining characteristic of Christians is the love of God poured out for us primarily on the cross and in the sacraments, and the love that we respond to God with toward him and toward our neighbor, the one great commandment, right? So it's been just really fruitful, really good to talk about this, Father. How about a challenge by choice that you might throw our way to kind of get into living this out more?
Sounds good, brother. I think that one of the things that would be most helpful is if we can just pause and make the distinction between being nice, being kind, liking, and loving. And if we don't have those categories kind of jumbling around in the back of our mind, it's going to either kind of fall into I failed or I succeeded. Mm. But we can kind of parcel it out and to say, actually, I was just being nice there. There wasn't much kindness. Or to say like, well, I didn't really like them, but I loved them. This is how we actually make progress in the Christian life of virtue. So think of times where you did not like someone or something, but you were willing to love for the benefit of another. That would be the essential challenge.
Love it. That's great. So being honest about who we like and don't like and moving in the direction, regardless of kindness and love, this great virtue and the ultimate virtue of love. That's beautiful. I love that, Father. Thanks for that. Would you pray with us, please?
I'd love to.
Great.
In the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, amen. Heavenly Father, we thank you for sending us the gift of your Son, who loved us even in our weakness, who was not afraid to enter into our brokenness, and who came to us in our greatest need. May this love so penetrate our own hearts that we may, in return, not only respond, but also be willing to be your witness in this world, to love those who are broken, those who are wounded, and those who are suffering, and those who are most difficult. We ask all these things through Christ our Lord. Amen.
Amen.
Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen. Father, you will be hopefully grateful to know that I don't find you difficult at all.
It's a mutual, actually. This is quite enjoyable.
I do like you a lot.
Thank you.
And I love being around you. And I love having you with us to share your wisdom and your presence with the rest of our audience. So thanks so much for being here again, as always. Friends, no matter where you live, whether it's Malta or the United Arab Emirates or Tennessee or wherever you find yourself, thank you so much for listening to This Whole Life. Remember, if you're interested in joining us for that book study in May on the love that keeps us sane, you can check out the show notes for a link to that book to buy it and to make sure you're ready for the month of May. And in the meantime, God bless you, and we will see you next time on This Whole Life.
This Whole Life is a production of the Martin Center for Integration. Visit us online at thiswholelifepodcast.com.
I was never really allowed to watch movies like that as a child, so I didn't. Mm. It's not a part of my childhood. But
True Confessions of Pat Mullane.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of things I wasn't allowed to do as a child. Mostly for my good, mom and dad. Thank you.